Welcome to Reconsider. I'm Bill Hartman. This is the podcast to challenge you to ask better questions, to look beyond traditional models of thinking and arrive at better health and fitness solutions.
You need a drink.
Happy holidays to anyone that's tuning into this during the time when it comes out.
Oh, yeah. So if you're watching this in the summertime, happy holidays.
Yeah. So within that vein, we have the Recon program. There is a promotion going on for that where we're giving $15 with the first purchase. So you can get pretty cheap training, $9.99 for a month. Or if you sign up for a yearly membership, it ends up being like $15 a month or something like that for the year.
That's cheap.
But that's during the holiday sale, which ends on January 5th. So if you're watching this before then, get in there before then. If not, still try the program. And then the other promotion we have going on for the UHP network is 2-week free trial. So typically there's like a 3-day free trial for UHP Plus, which is the members only area where we get into more videos, more calls with Bill, more courses, stuff like that. And that 2-week free trial will be ending on January 5th as well. So get in there for those things. What I wanted to talk about a little more today is training. How we train, I think a lot of misconceptions around training wides and narrows. I think one of the misconceptions about when we talk about training wides and narrows and people say that they are utilizing this ISA approach to training people, what they don't seem to understand, I think, and that we can explain a little bit better is that it's not a cookbook style. It's not, there aren't like these rules exist for wides and these rules exist for narrows. And if I train a wide with these three exercises, they will get relative motion back. If I train these narrows with these exercises, they will be better force producers. It's not the case necessarily. And I think one of the first problems that people run into is not recognizing, like we talked about in the last episode, where someone is within their base of support or worse, outside of their base of support.
Right.
And that needs to be addressed first. So within this episode, we're going to talk about figuring that out and what we would do to get someone back to be able to train and then how we train them. What if I've identified someone being outside their base of support? So I know someone is either a wide or narrow. Someone being outside of their base of support. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get them back within their base of support with the end goal of them being able to train.
Yes.
What are some of the things that I'm trying to address first? What are my priorities? What's a hierarchy of needs in terms of getting someone back within their base of support?
Well, they're going to be exiting to the right in this circumstance. Okay. And so anything.
And so just to clarify, for both narrows and wides, both are exiting to the right outside the base of support. Okay.
Yes. Now they have alternative strategies because their starting conditions were different, and then their movement inside the base of support is different.
Yes.
But they're going to exit in the same direction.
Okay. To the right.
Okay. So when we say get somebody back inside the base of support, we're not going to pull them back into the base of support. What we're actually going to do is we're going to take where the base of support would have been based on their starting conditions, and then we're going to move that in the rightward direction to go recapture the ground contacts that would bring them back inside the base of support. So we're not you're never going to be successful trying to pull somebody back into the base of support. What you want to do is you want to move it over to where they are to allow them to access this. Because think about this. If somebody's moving in a direction, the first thing you got to do is stop. Right.
Yeah.
And so then the easiest thing to do is, well, we'll just move the base of support over. We'll create a stop. And now, because we've moved the base of support to them, they actually have ground contacts. They can apply a force in the ground and they can stop their movement.
This is my plate balancing analogy. It works perfectly because if the plate's falling over, you don't go up top and push the plate back. You move your hand underneath the plate.
Underneath it. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to create that. So like everything is falling. You're not like, oh, I'm going to grab the falling person and throw them back in the other direction. Like you don't meet a compensation by creating a different compensation, which is what a lot of people might do.
Yes.
So if they're falling to the right, they give themselves a compensation, or they give their client or patient a compensation to fall to the left.
Yes.
So now you've created even more of a twist, even more of an orientation.
Yes.
So instead, what Bill is saying, like, if I'm balancing the plate or I'm balancing a stick on my hand, I move my hand under where the stick has fallen to.
Right.
So we've taken based on their starting condition. So let's clarify a little more about, like, if I'm moving a narrow back under that fallen scenario, what am I addressing with that starting position that's different than if I was moving the wide back under the base?
As far as moving the base of support?
So you had said we're moving that person based on their starting conditions. So the narrow starting conditions are different than the wide starting conditions.
Yes.
So what are the two differences there as I move them?
Oh, okay. Take a sharp left to right cut. Okay. And then as you're cutting off the left foot, you land on the right foot, and then the left foot has to step across. Okay. That would be their move as they're stepping outside of the base of support.
Yeah.
Okay. And so think about what you would do to sort of lead yourself in that direction is that you would be turning your thorax rather aggressively from left to right to sort of lead yourself in that direction. And so the first thing you would do there is you're going to stop the thorax from moving. And then we bring the pelvis underneath the thorax, and now we have secured the base of support underneath the skeleton. Okay.
All
right. And then if you think about a wide, so starting conditions were different, right? As they try to stay inside the base of support, they're going to try to reduce the volume on the left side of their body. And in doing so, they push down harder on the left, which sort of squirts them over to the right. So just imagine like a water balloon. You squeeze a water balloon on one side, the other side gets bigger, and the balloon essentially moves away from where you were squeezing, right? So if I squish down the left side, the right side expands relative to, I will move in the direction of expansion, universal principle. And so in that circumstance, what I have to do is I have to reduce the pressure on the left side. So we call that unweighting the left side. So I unweight the left side, okay? And then that allows me to move the base of support back underneath the right side. So that would be the most significant difference between the two, because you can't use the exact same strategy. We can actually use the same exercise in some cases, because the representation of the exercise sort of addresses both needs depending on archetype, but they're going to respond differently. So, so for instance, it's like in one circumstance, I'm going to slide the base of support underneath the thorax. In the other circumstance, the same exercise will just take the pressure off of the left side and allow me to ground the right side. So there you go. So that would be the most significant difference between the two archetypes. Okay. Which is right. Why, and again, sometimes, even if you don't understand this principle, you can get lucky and you give two people of different archetypes the same exercise, and they both respond favorably, but understand that they did two different things in that circumstance. Because if you don't understand that, the time that it does, you know, arise where you do need to be much more specific as far as the activity in question based on archetype, then that's where you're going to run into a little bit of a pickle, because then you won't have an ideal situation.
Okay. So I guess maybe we should give some examples. So if we have been narrow outside the base of support being pulled down on the right, what's an example of some activities that can help start to get them out of that?
Okay. So step one, stop the movement to the right.
Yeah.
Okay. So the easiest way to stop movement to the right is literally put a barrier there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So right sideline, you could go.
So there you go. So it's like we don't really think about it that way, right? When we put somebody on their right side, But the reality is like, oh, that literally stops all movement to the right because there is a barrier there. That's why right sideline tends to be one of those things, like in a situation where you're trying to regain the greatest degree of relative movement in somebody that might be in a painful situation where they can't exercise upright because of all the compensatory strategies. That's why we tend to default into right sideline activities, because it does arrest all of this rightward movement, because you can't go through, theoretically, can't go through the floor, right? So I'm going to stop the turn, and then I'm going to be able to reorganize the base of support to where the thorax and the pelvis are now aligned, so to speak, within the base of support. Therefore, I have greater access to relative motions.
Okay, so let's use this right sideline position, and then we can speak to the differences between what we would do with a narrow and a wide in that right sideline position, using mm-hmm. the same position, same starting activity, just mm-hmm. different mm-hmm. Cues. Uh-huh.
Quite simply. So lay on your right side. Let's make an assumption that we need effective contact with the ground. So we need things that provide a sensory input, so we know where we are in space, whether we can slow down or not. So for instance, if I was to lay on my right side and the shoulder is resting on the ground, I would want to make sure that I have a hip resting on the ground as well, because those two contacts would equate to one another in reference to alignment of the thorax versus the pelvis. Okay. Mm-hmm. As far as upper extremity contacts, in this circumstance, I might use the elbow and a knee again to sort of equate those contacts. If I'm in a situation where, let's say, I get the upper body contacts effectively, I lay them down, I get a hip, but I don't get a knee, that means that I don't have a pelvis that can orient itself in the same direction as the thorax under this circumstance. That's just indicative of the fact that, okay, I still have a thorax that is turning to a greater degree than a pelvis in that circumstance. So I might have other things that I need to do first. Okay. But the goal would be to equate those contacts. That way, again, I have aligned a thorax and a pelvis within the same base of support. Okay. Now, if I look at this from the perspective of a wide ISA and I'm laying on my right side, the right side is weighted, right? That is my ground contact. The left side is unweighted. Immediately, I have a similar circumstance that is favorable for both archetypes, because I needed to unweight the left side in the wide ISA, and I needed to arrest the turn and bring the pelvis and thorax into alignment on the right side for the narrow. So I've used the same activity for both archetypes, but for different reasons.
Right. And this is where some of the parts of the model can be confusing, because it's like right sideline works really well for both archetypes. So mm-hmm. if you don't understand the differences of the starting conditions, it might just seem like right sideline works for everybody. So all of these activities mm-hmm. that we're going to talk about should work for everybody as well.
Right.
It's not that simple. So we've got right sideline that accomplishes mm-hmm. what we're trying to do as we're trying to work, build off of that. So maybe we take like a developmental approach to this and say that we're laying on the ground. So now we're going to get into more upright activities, mm-hmm. Moving the base of support in like low and high oblique positions. Maybe we talk about that mm-hmm. and why, what differences we'll see between the two archetypes. And because this is where it will start to vary a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, if we use a high oblique sit as a frame of reference, we have another activity that can work in both circumstances because of the space that is necessary. So again, we have a rightward loaded activity. The benefit for the narrow in a high oblique sit is the fact that I'm going to put my hand on the ground, which stops the thorax. Once again, I'm going to use the contact in the pelvis, so ischial tuberosity and then right lateral knee in that circumstance. brings the pelvis and the thorax into alignment within the same base of support. So again, very, very useful. In that same circumstance, if I put a wide in the same position, I have now unweighted the left side relative to the right side. So once again, both are favorable. The big difference though between the two is the amount of internal rotation that is now accessible. Because a high oblique sit is going to have a stronger external rotation bias, which the narrows will tend to find much more accessible than the wides. Okay. Now, the simple way to address this is changing the high oblique sit activity that you might be superimposed. So let's just say we're doing like a right high oblique sit, left arm pull down. In the circumstance of the narrow, we would want to maintain the ER bias. So we have a right hand contact on the ground. We have a left hand that would be secured to the cable pulley, which would be up and to the left relative to that ground contact. Whereas with the wide, we would move the pulley contact over to the right side. So we're going across body, which is going to superimpose the greater degree of internal rotation that we would need for the wide ISA, because the wide ISA came from a posterior contact inside the base of support. And so by shifting the pulley position from a leftward pulley to a rightward pulley, I'm actually increasing the amount of downforce on the right side, which actually magnifies the unweighting strategy on the left.
Okay. And then, so talking about that as a benefit and a reason to do it for a wide, why would I not want to do that across body pull down with a narrow to start?
Because I may not have the capacity to increase the degree of internal rotation that would be required to execute the exercise. And so chances are you'll run into two things. You're going to run into a loss of a ground contact. So they would actually lose the ischial tuberosity contact on the ground. So they would load the knee to a greater degree, lose the heel contact, and now you're once again in no man's land as far as the base of support. So you're going to actually lose relative motion in that circumstance. They don't have the same capacity to lay down the degree of IR that the wide would have the capacity to do. So we would typically, and it's not that you would never use that activity in that circumstance, in the circumstance of a narrow, it's just that what you may find is it may not be the first choice.
Right. And what are the typical compensations that you'll see from a narrow trying to acquire this IR?
If you've ever put somebody in a high oblique sit and it looks like they're in a right side bend, that's going to be a biggie because that's actually a substitution for a lack of internal rotation. That's going to be the bigger.
They're going to look down to the right. They're going to bend their mm-hmm. head.
You'll see it up in the cervical spine. So it'll look kind of shruggy in the neck. You'll see like the side bend through the spine. You'll see an increase in the anterior orientation to help maintain the lower extremity contacts.
Yeah.
The unfortunate circumstance in that case is that you have just driven them back into the same compensatory strategy that we're trying to alleviate.
Right. So you're pushing them over to the outside the right foot.
Yeah, you just twisted the thorax harder away from midline to the right to create the IR into the ground. And right. Again, that literally is the compensatory strategy that we're trying to resolve. So, yeah.
Yeah, but further into a narrows program, you might have, once you're able to mm-hmm. capture the range of motion, superimpose yes. the IR from an earlier position first,
correct.
Then transition to that crossbody
yes.
and resist, be able to resist the change. That it's
great. Yeah, so there's certainly difference in exercises as to whether they're going to enhance your ability to capture a position or challenge you to hold on to that position. So yeah. Once we're inside the base of support with the narrow, we want to move them back from right to left. So they are a left to right bias to exit the base of support. We're trying to bring them back from right to left. Once we've secured enough internal rotation, we truly want to challenge them to magnify that So when challenged in the future, they actually have a strategy to hold them inside the base of support where they can actually maintain relative motions.
Yeah, because we still want a narrow to be able to produce force. We just don't want there to be a huge cost to them doing that.
Right. We don't want it to be a big compensation.
Yeah. Yeah, and we want them to be able to recover from producing force. So yes. It's like you not have to be stuck in compensatory land every time you want to try to do something hard with intensity.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're progressive. We were right sideline. Then we went up into a oblique position. Let's take, I know this kind of this is a non-starter for a lot of narrows, but being in like a using different kneeling positions, I guess maybe we go there before we stand up.
Yeah. Like, are you talking about like a half kneeling?
So I'm basically creating like a getting up off the ground scenario as a way to progress someone back to standing. So we started right sideline, which worked for both archetypes. We went into a high oblique position, which can work for both archetypes with those exceptions that you're talking about, either like a more yard representation where I'm not reaching, I'm reaching on the opposite side of the body. I'm not crossing over.
Right.
And then the IR representation crossing over. So we've talked about those two. And then if we go up, we bring our butt off the ground. Now we're in like a kneeling position and we're going to progress to standing. But if we're in this kneeling position, there are, we know that a wide is going to be able to acquire a half kneeling position far easier because it's more of an orthogonal position. It matches with their structure.
Yes.
But what would the differences be between kneeling, half kneeling positions for wides and narrows as I'm progressing to standing activities?
Okay. So you sort of mentioned it in your example is that if you think about like a perfect half kneeling representation, which probably doesn't exist, but we'll just say it does.
It's going to be a wide.
We're looking at a bunch of 90 degree angles.
Yeah.
So you have this perfectly horizontal pelvis. We have a femur relative to the pelvis. We got one femur that is 90 degrees to the long axis. We have another femur that is directly on the long axis, right? So a bunch of 90 degree angles. Narrow's not going to do that.
Right.
They're just not going to have the capacity to do so because they're just not designed in such a way that they would have the capacity to approach the orthogonal in that representation. So we have this little trick that we do where we throw a little bit of ER back into the system in this circumstance. And so when we bring them up to half kneeling, we start to use what we call front side open or backside open activities, which is all we're doing is we're increasing the ER represented, which allows us to create a side-to-side gradient. So we can direct this in either direction. So if I'm in a left knee up, right knee down, half kneeling scenario, and I go backside open, which would be adding ER on the right side, on the downside, that's going to create a gradient for me to be able to go from right to left. And so I would be able to capture a little bit more of the downforce on that side, because again, we're going to move in the direction of expansion, universal principle. So I create a stronger ER on the right. I move myself from right to left. If I had to ground myself more aggressively on the right side in this left half kneeling position, then all I would have to do is do a front side open in this circumstance. And I've actually increased the downforce on the downside knee. And so that would be the way that we would modify half kneeling. Now we can do this with wides as well, depending on how much ER and IR we have represented. But from a structural bias standpoint, especially in a half kneeling position, we're going to tend to use the front side, back side open in the narrows quite a bit more.
Okay. So to clarify what Bill's talking about, if anyone knows anything about baseball, so I need you to picture like a baseball diamond. You're in a half kneeling position on home plate. You're facing the pitcher's mound at second base. If I want to be in a front side open position and if half kneeling, I will open my left knee towards third base while still facing the pitcher's mound and second base. If I want to be in a backside open, I'm going to, while still staying straight towards the pitcher's mound, I'm going to open my right knee. I'm going to twist my back foot. And so my right knee is pointing towards first base. Mm-hmm. Those are the two postures and positions that Bill is talking about. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you are saying that if I'm going to try to increase the IR demands on the bottom, the right knee down, I will open the left knee towards third base, the front, to have a front side open position.
Yes, sir.
And then what was when I go backside open, right leg is pointed towards first base. I'm facing the pitcher's mound still.
Yes.
What is that creating again?
So that creates a right to left gradient. So you're gonna shift the center of gravity from the right knee towards the left side. So it's gonna be easier for you to capture. In this case, it's gonna be an early IR representation on the left side.
Okay, so that
because we're adding ER on one side to create a pressure gradient, which actually shifts the center of gravity away from that side. Okay. So it's just all this is muscle activity and pressure management to create a gradient.
Okay. So these are our kneeling positions. Mm-hmm. That's the tweaks that we can make in those positions to change the IR ER demands. Now we've progressed from kneeling to standing. So I guess maybe we can talk about, because front side open, backside open stuff can be used in like a marching sense. Uh-huh. There's also like different, this is a question we actually got brought up on the network recently about like, how do you get a narrow out of the right side or a wide off of the left side to get out of the right side on like a field or a track? And the answer, which I haven't posted yet, is more, it's like moving in reverse, step two activities. But I think we should, how about you talk about front side open, backside open, marching, and then different step twos. And then that'll be where we wrap up today.
Okay. So it's easier to see the orthogonal representation first.
Sure.
I think.
Yeah. So just talking about forward and backward marching.
Yeah. So if you were just doing like an A march, kind of a forward or backward A march, and I would recommend like it, get the backward first because you're going to capture a lot more IR there. In that situation, you're pushing straight down into the ground. So these are greatest representations of early IR on the elevated knee side, the greatest representation of late IR on the downside. So those are your orthogonals, right? Your wide ISAs are always going to be a little bit better at doing that than your narrows in that circumstance. And so, and again, because we know this, then we can start to bias the ground contact in the narrows. And so where we might have marching activities that are a little bit more straightforward, straight back kind of a thing with the wides, what we might actually do is actually bias on the diagonal with the narrows. They're going to look like the same activities. They're just going to be skewed a little bit on the diagonal because the way that they're going to be able to push into the ground is going to be slightly different. So they're not going to be able to push straight down into the ground. They're going to be slightly biased towards external rotation. And so we just take them off the diagonal. And so where you might do a marching drill the wide ISA facing straight ahead, your narrow is just going to turn slightly away from midline. They can run like in parallel. One guy looks like he's kind of skipping on a diagonal. The other guy's kind of skipping on a straight line.
Right.
We can take a similar representation. Like if we're doing sled, you mentioned the step twos and things like that. So like if we're doing sled drags and the like, we're going to basically follow the same premise where we would have, and when we say step two, a step two, in a sled drag is you take one step back with your left foot and then you don't step past the foot with the right foot. You step to it. So they're even. And what this allows us to do, it allows us to control for the degrees of ERs and IRs, as we're taking the steps, because when you step through, there's more turning involved with a step through than there would be with a step two. Right. But we follow the same premise if we're doing those types of activities. because the narrow is going to be biased just a little bit more towards the external rotation. So they're just slightly askew as they're following their line, so to speak, in the sled drag. So we can be respectful of their capacity as to how they push into the ground with the ER bias versus the IR bias.
Okay. So what that looks like is going to be like, so let's say I'm going to march forward, but I'm going to do like a front side open march. So I'm bringing my knees up. Oh, uh-huh. They're not going toward midline. They're kind of coming up and out towards like my shoulders.
Yep.
What would I be accomplishing by doing that?
Like you're keeping them in the available spaces that they have.
Sure. Yep. So if I have a narrow,
first and foremost, right?
Yeah.
So when a narrow picks their knee up, there's a turn that's associated with it to a greater degree than there would be in a wide ISA individual.
Right.
Okay. Now we don't see it because of the turn on the opposite side that's also happening. So both sides are actually turning farther into ER. So if we look at the foot on the ground, the foot's going to look similar. Regardless of archetype, what we have to appreciate is what the pelvis is actually doing is to its orientation in space as you're moving through space. So they actually have more turn in the pelvis than the wide ISA does. And so then what we're doing is we're just emphasizing the turn away from midline, which increases the ER represented on both sides as they push down into the ground.
Okay. Yeah. So that would be like the use case for a front side open march.
Yeah.
It's an ER individual that if I'm trying to slowly superimpose more and more IR, I might start there and then start to work them in.
Correct.
So you could go forwards with a front side open march and then do a backwards, just regular A march. Because you're moving backwards, you're creating that space towards the heel and then allowing them to bring even more so the front side towards midline.
Absolutely.
Okay. Absolutely. Then maybe after I do those two things, I've prepped them to then move straight forward with an A march.
Correct.
That with, you know, this is an important consideration to make because your narrows might not always be able to get to midline like you would want to see. Like with if you were very, you know, dead set on everyone's got to get to the midline with their hands and their knees, the narrows might be a bit outside of that, and that might be okay. So it's just something to realize, not try to jam a bunch of square pegs into round holes here.
Correct.
Your wides might get to the midline in a much cleaner looking way, but your narrows might be kind of like looking like they're outside a bit, and that might be all right.
It's like if you look at jumping strategies and landing strategies. Yeah. It's actually a really easy KPI,
okay,
to use because what you'll see and for, the thing that always pops into my head is female volleyball players that are very tall, the very tall narrows because they're this really strong archetype.
Right? Yes.
And so they're going to give you the bigger magnifications of the behaviors, and so if you look at you'll see the knees come closer together on landings and takeoffs and things like that. It's like, oh, okay. So this is somebody that does not have the same capacity to push straight down into the ground. So I'm just gonna bias them away from midline. And you said it yourself. It's like this is not something that we would hope that would be permanent. We want to slowly bring them closer and closer to where they're delivering a stronger force into the ground.
Yeah.
So I want my athletes to be as forceful as possible, but I don't want to drive them into compensatory strategies that are going to start to compromise structure and health.
Right. It's like how do we realistically meet people where they are? And you can use drills, you can use the environment, you can use shoes, you can use tape, whatever. You're trying to meet someone where they are first and then safely superimpose what you want on top of that. Okay, so real quick, we talked about front side open, marching as a way to meet someone where they are, superimpose IR from a position of more ER bias. So then you were talking about skewing someone in a march, and what that would look like would be, like we were saying before, standing on home plate, facing the pitcher's mound. I'm going to take my right foot, and I'm going to point it towards first base. Yes. And then I'm going to march or skip straight ahead while my right foot is out towards first base. And that would be a backside open march or a backside open skip for a narrow.
Yes.
That allows them to work from their ER bias, put IR down to get off of that right foot to skip forward.
Yes.
And I might just have it be an emphasis on just the right foot to start, and then I would switch, because if I'm trying to get out of that right side. So that would be like a backside open example of a skip or a march. Mm-hmm. And then with the step twos that we mentioned, the differences you would want when you're talking about a step two drill for a wide versus a narrow, a narrow can, since the goal is to try to get out of the right foot to out of the cut on the right, I can do a step two from right to left. So I'm stepping my left foot forward, pushing, cutting off of my right foot, and then bringing my feet back together. So push off the right foot, step the left foot, bring the right foot back to the left foot. So it's this sort of like, it looks like a dance step. It's like a 1-2, 1-2 sort of dance type of thing. If I'm trying to unweight a wide, so I'm trying to unweight the left side, what would that step two look like?
So you think about, so unweighting would be a representation of a greater degree of external rotation on the left side, more internal rotation on the right side. So if I would be stepping back with a right foot lead, I'm going to be landing a great deal of internal rotation on that right side. So this right heel contact becomes very, very important. And then I'm skewing the lead leg more into external rotation. So again, it fits our representation of moving the wide ISA back to the heel. And then that becomes it'll look like you're moving in a straight line. It's actually going to be a front side open push off the ground back into the right heel to add the IR. So once again, we're creating this ER gradient to move them back into the right heel contact.
Okay. So there's my answer for Joel. So Joel is trying to figure out what it would look like on the field. So you're doing narrows are doing a step to a right to left step two going forward. Wides are doing a right to left step two going in reverse.
Yes.
So right foot stepping back, left foot's coming back. Right foot stepping back, left foot's coming back. So that's your wide to unweight the left by using like a retro movement. And then the other is you're out of the cut on the right.
Yes.
Well, you would actually. So both of them would eventually do the out of the cut on the right. It's just the wide would need to go backwards first with that.
Correct.
To unweight the left and then come out.
Then they would be able to turn out of it. Yeah, because you got to make a very tight right to left turn for the wides eventually.
Okay. So ground to standing, getting someone out of the base support, getting out of the cut on the right side to the left, accomplishing every possible thing that we need a human being to be able to do to perform.
Yeah.
We did it.
Piece of cake.
Piece of cake.
Now you can do his work with humans.
Piece of cake. Yeah. Now you got to put it in. You got to be able to coach it. You got to be able to make it safe to fail, so you can make the mistakes with them and there all you that go. Stuff. Anyways, piece of cake. What's Bill's favorite cake? I know the answer to this.
this is a red velvet cake from Taylor's. Even the specific bakery, Taylor's Bakery. Only is a red velvet cake with this really hardcore buttercream icing that is worth its weight in gold. I always order an extra pound of icing. It is pure heaven.
Hey, if you ever you want to get to an intensive in Indiana.
Yes.
That's when you're going to be able to try it.
Yeah, we do it at the intensive here in Indiana.
Mine's a nostalgia thing, but it's also delicious, and it's not really cake, but Carvel ice cream cakes. I love a Carvel ice cream cake.
An ice cream cake? What flavor is the ice cream?
It's vanilla, chocolate, with this like little cookie fudge layer in the middle, and then they put like frosting on the outside, but the frosting is frozen. Yeah. It's like, I don't know. It's a wonderful thing.